Nej.
Good morning. Show the better side of the family this morning. Most of you had, well, none of you had met Isabel. She was born in Spain. For those of you who don't know us, we are Joey and Danny Easley. We've been in Morocco for the last about year and a half. And this is my wife, Danny. I'm Joey. That's Josiah, our oldest. He's, how old are you, Josiah? He's 5. And Benson is 4. How old are you, William?
2.
And Isabella will be a year on Wednesday. And we're due to have our 5th in January. So yep, they're going to go have a seat. And we'll go ahead and get started. Let me just open up in a word of prayer. Father, thank you for this morning, this beautiful morning that you've given us. Thank you for this church body that we can meet together every Sunday. And I just pray that you would give me your words to speak, and that you would challenge each and every one of us this morning. And just that, most of all, that your name would be glorified throughout all the earth. Ask these things in the name of Jesus. Amen. So Dave told me I pretty much have free rein to say whatever I want. I don't know if he knew what he was getting himself into. But I first of all just wanted to say thank you to all of you for being behind us. I can honestly say that we wouldn't be able to do what we do without you guys. You guys are as much a part of this work in Morocco as we are. And I love it in Morocco. I was born there, spent the first 9 years of my life there, and in a lot of ways it feels like home. But it's easy to get burnt out in an Islamic culture. There's a lot of things that just rub you the wrong way. And over time, you want nothing but to get out of there. And but knowing that you guys are behind us, praying for us, supporting us, it really makes all the difference. And it makes it doable. It's kind of difficult to explain everything that's gone on in a year and a half. I could stand up here and tell you a lot of exciting stories. Most of you have heard a lot of them in the updates that we sent out. But I think I'll save a lot of those for the more one-on-one conversations, because it's just hard to know where each of you are at. Some of you have been following us since the earthquake happened in 2004. Some of you might not even know where Morocco is. And so it's hard to kind of encompass all of you in that. So I will talk a little bit about Morocco. But I wanted to this morning challenge you guys with the idea that all of us, all of you, are called to be missionaries. And I don't mean just missionaries in this area, in the Gig Harbor area. I really believe that God has called all of us to be missionaries around the world. Obviously, we can't all go. But as we're going to look at this morning, I think, you know, we're called to be Christ-like. And Christ has a heart for the entire world, and I believe that he wants us to have that same heart. I went to Multnomah Bible College. I started in 2001, I believe it was. That's where I met my wife, Danny. While I was there in my senior year, I became president of what we called the Student World Outreach Team, or the SWAT team, It's basically what it used to be called Student Missionary Union, but they thought they'd come up with a cooler name of SWAT. So all 600 students at Multnomah were required to go once a week to a chapel on missions. And so as president, I got to kind of control that, which was pretty cool. Got to bring in missionaries to speak, and I really enjoyed it. But I soon found that there was really a lot of almost animosity amongst the students about this fact. You know, not only did they have to go to chapel, but they had to sit through missions chapel. You know, and as the pastoral ministries guys would say, you know, I'm not going to be a missionary. Why do I have to sit through this? Or the youth ministries guys, what does this have to do with me? You know, if I have to sit through a missions chapel, shouldn't you have to sit through a youth ministries chapel? And I think that kind of unfortunately displays the idea that we as Christians have of missions, that it's something for the professionals, you could say. It's for, you know, we don't have to be involved because there's other people doing that. I think historically that's been true of a lot of areas. You know, you can look at evangelism. Is evangelism just for professionals? Is discipleship just for professionals? So, you know, we all know that we're called to be involved in evangelism and discipleship in a lot of different things. But today I want to look at specifically missions. We're going to look at a guy who, well, I'm going to look through the whole Bible actually, but when we hear of missionaries in the Bible, usually we think of Paul. He's obviously a missionary traveling around. But I would say that the first missionary that we see called in the Bible is Abraham. And so if you would like to turn to Genesis chapter 12, I'm just going to read here verses 1 through 3. It says, "The Lord had said to Abram, 'Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you.'" Now, obviously, this is a special passage because God is choosing Abraham, or Abram at the time, to be his people. Israel was called as his nation. But I think we see here God's purpose in that. What was God's purpose in choosing Israel? You know, was it because they were such great people that he just wanted to spend a lot of time with them and bless only them? No. His purpose was to show his glory through Abraham, through the nation of Israel, to the whole world. You know, he didn't tell Abraham, go live off on your own and, you know, you're going to multiply, have lots of descendants, and you're going to kind of live in a compound. No, the idea was that they would be a light. They would be an example to the entire world. So this isn't just a New Testament example or idea. This is repeated to Abraham three other times, pretty specifically in Genesis 18, Genesis 22 and 28. Actually, that last one's to his son, Jacob. But again, there's that idea of being a blessing to the entire, to all the earth. We're told again in Exodus chapter 9, God tells Pharaoh that he's hardened his heart for a purpose. That purpose, what was that purpose? It was so that God's name might be proclaimed in all the earth. Throughout Numbers and Deuteronomy, through all the laws, we can see a lot of those were set up, again, so that they could be an example to the foreigner, to the alien. Joshua chapter 4, when God allowed Israel to cross the Red Sea on dry ground, they're told that the reason for that is so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful. Again, 1 Chronicles 16:23 and 24. I'm not turning to a lot of these, but if you'd like some of the references afterward, I'd be happy to give them to you. In Chronicles, we are commanded to sing to the Lord all the earth, proclaim his salvation day after day, declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. Isaiah was another missionary. I kind of laughed. I'd never noticed it before. A song that we sung today, which I really like. It's a great song. The Holy of Holies. The last lines that we sang were, take the coal, cleanse my lips, here I am. But they left out. If you look at the reference, it's, here I am, send me. And we often like to leave that out. We like to say, here I am, send somebody else. But Isaiah 49:6 says, God says to Isaiah, it is too small a thing for you to be my servant to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I have kept. Now that to me seems like a big enough job for Isaiah. The nation of Israel was straying, you know, and Isaiah was called to bring them back. But God says, that's too small a thing. That's not the only thing I want from you. God says, I will make you a light for the Gentiles, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. Jeremiah, once again, Jeremiah 1, verse 5. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. You could look at the whole book of Jonah. That's, in a lot of ways, that's a lesson on disobeying God's commands to reach the Gentiles, the nations. You know, Jonah didn't think they deserved to hear the message. You get into the New Testament. Matthew and Mark both tell us that the good news must be preached to all nations before the end times will come about. You all know the Great Commission, which is repeated in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Acts. Galatians 3, verse 8, reminds us of God's promise to Abraham. It says, the Scriptures foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announce the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you. And finally, in Revelation 7, we see that in heaven we will worship alongside every nation, tribe, people, and language. Now, why do I go over all these verses with you? You know, a big pet peeve of mine is people just kind of taking snippets of the Bible and using them out of context. And it's difficult to... I just wanted to kind of show you, I really think that if you read through the Bible and you look for it, you will see it throughout the entire Old Testament, throughout the entire New Testament, that God has a heart for all nations. And he wants us to have that same heart. He wants us to look beyond our immediate surroundings, beyond our immediate family, beyond our immediate town, beyond our immediate state, to the entire world. I suppose you could say I've been encouraged in this line of thinking by my dad. I met a couple just a few months ago in Morocco that had met him, and one of their questions to him was, when were you called to go to Morocco? And his response was that he was called before he was born. Matthew 28 was a clear enough calling for him to go. He didn't need a special voice from God to go. Now, and that impacted this couple enough that they themselves decided to become missionaries. Hudson Taylor said it this way. He said, "The Great Commission is not an option to be considered. It's a command to be obeyed." You know, again, how many of you think that evangelism is just for an evangelist? Or preaching is just for a pastor? No, I'm thankful for this church that doesn't see that. We don't see that Christianity is just for the professionals. Christianity is for all of us. So some of you would argue, okay, you know, we're a body, right? We all have different parts. There's the hand, there's the foot. The Bible uses that example, right? And that's true. But I think often we use that as an excuse to say, well, the hand is taking care of that, so I don't have to worry about it. You know, I think of it in terms of when I'm roofing. My hands are doing something. My feet are keeping me on the roof. You know, my knees are often kneeling down on the roof. They're all pieces of my body are doing a different job, but they're all focused on the same thing. My feet aren't sitting by a pool relaxing while my hands are doing all the work. You know, I think that I love the example of the body because we do all have different parts. We do all have different roles. But I think we lose sight of the fact that we are called to work as a body, not as individuals. And again, that's why I'm so thankful for you guys, because without you, we couldn't do what we're doing. I like simple and... John Piper, I think that's one reason I really like him, because he often says things very simply. And he said it this way. He said, you have three options: go, send, or disobey. And that's kind of my challenge for you guys this morning. You know, God has a heart for you. God has a heart for your neighbor. God has a heart for your coworkers. God has a heart for those that are halfway around the world. And I think that I'm hoping that you guys will have that same heart. Now, you know, I don't want you guys to think that I'm concluding that missionaries are, you know, we're to put them on a pedestal. That missionaries are better, those that go are better than those that don't. That's not true at all. You know, I don't feel like I'm making a big sacrifice by going to Morocco. My wife makes more of a sacrifice than I do, that's for sure. But really, we have it good over there. We have a nice place to stay. We eat great food. We have a lot of friends. We get to spend other people's money and get the credit ourselves. You know, I can honestly say I would rather be there than here. And it's, you know, as I would tell my classmates at Multnomah, a missionary is not any better than a pastor or a youth leader or a plumber or a welder. But it is, I think it is, it's important. It's important for any person in any church to be involved in missions. And I think it's healthy for a church to be involved in that. So the question then is, how can we be involved? The obvious one is giving. I've heard it said that if you want to know where someone's faith is, look at their checkbook. You know, I don't really use a checkbook anymore, but it's a sobering thought to think, okay, if I think back on the last 5 years of my life, where has my money gone? You know, this is an interesting story I ran across about the Crusades. They say that during the Crusades, the mercenaries were baptized with their swords held above the water. They were essentially saying, "Lord, I want you to control my life, but I don't want you to control my sword." And I think a lot of us, unfortunately, live that way with our wallets. We say, "Lord, control my life, but I'm going to control my wallet." I thought I'd throw a joke in there. There was a wealthy man who died. He wanted to take his wealth with him. Maybe some of you have heard this before. So he arrived at the pearly gates with two suitcases full of gold bars. Peter tells him that luggage isn't allowed, but the man pleads so earnestly that after taking a look in the suitcases, Peter lets him in. As the man struggles with his suitcases, one of the angels asked Peter what they contain. Looking bemused, Peter replied, "Paving slabs." So that's just something I'd like to challenge you guys with, to consider. You know, consider in your own lives, where is your money going? And I'm not talking just about missions here. I'm talking about the church. I'm talking about, you know, keeping that eternal perspective. It's key. The same could be spent of how we spend our time. I forget if it was John or Joel Myers that I heard about during their New Tribes training, where they had to break down each day into half-hour increments and just kind of analyze what they were doing. For every half an hour, they would have to stop and say, "What did I do this last half an hour?" And, I mean, obviously we can't do that every day or we'd waste a lot of time. But again, that's a sobering thought. How do I spend my time? You know, how much of my time do I spend just on work, on play, on Facebook, versus prayer or studying the Bible or evangelism? I'd like to look at Ecclesiastes, a very depressing book. I think most of you are pretty familiar with it. You know, talking about how meaningless life is, right? And it's something that crosses my mind. You know, why am I here? The whole book really is pretty depressing. It's talking about how meaningless life is. There's nothing new under the sun. But if we look at how the author concludes the book, this is chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes, verses 9 through 14. It says, "Not only was the teacher wise, but also he imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now, all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil." And, you know, again, this is not a foreign concept to you guys, this idea that we are here not for our own pleasure, we're here for God's glory. And that's our duty, is to spread His glory. And it's not a dreary duty. You know, my favorite day of this last week was when we got to go help on the roof. Not because I love roofing, but because it was an accomplishment. I was able to say I wasn't doing it for my own good. I was doing it for God's glory. And I think God always rewards us for that, always, without exception. Dave is a big inspiration to me in this area. I want to be like Dave when I grow up. You know, I've known him most of my life as a fireman. I don't know how many years he spent as a fireman for the Tacoma Fire Department. And I can't even begin to imagine the dedication that took to spend decades of his life working at that one job. So then he gets to the point where he can retire. You know, he's earned the right to go relax by the pool and do nothing, right? So what does he do? He goes and gets involved in the church, where he gets to deal with us messy people. And to me, that's just a great example of what God has called us to. And Dave, you wouldn't change that for the world, would you? Even if you knew how time consuming and difficult it would be at times. I suppose I should probably tell you a little bit about Morocco, since that was, I think, kind of what I was asked to come speak about. Essentially, we do what we did with the roof on Friday morning. We help people in need by building houses. There was an earthquake in the north of Morocco, 2004. Over 10,000 homes destroyed. And to this day, people are living in the elements. You know, it gets down to freezing in the wintertime. In the summer, you're dealing with snakes coming into tents and mud huts. These people that we work with, even if they saved their entire lives, would never be able to build a house for themselves. And so it is such a joy to be able to meet their physical needs in that sense of getting them out of the elements. But I love the balance that we have there of also reaching their spiritual needs. We are able to share the gospel, which is an incredible gift in a Muslim country. Most Muslim countries, we couldn't get away with what we do in Morocco. And even in Morocco, I don't think we'd get away with what we do if we didn't have the money to build these houses. I'm sure of it. We have built almost 120 houses since 2004. We host teams from all over the U.S. and Northern Ireland. You know, I would challenge you guys to consider going. You know, I some of you have been, and I know that some of you won't be able to go, but I really would challenge you guys to consider it. It's a good experience. I think that for myself, I get a bigger picture of who God is by going to another culture and seeing how they worship, how they pray. You know, it's so easy, even for myself coming back here, to get caught in a bubble where I see God as the God of just Americans, or just people here in Good Harbor, but there's just nothing more exciting to me than being able to share the gospel with somebody who has never heard it. And these Muslims, the Reef Berbers are who we're working with, and they are Muslims, I would say, by culture more than by choice. I would say they are more serious about their faith than most nominal Christians. You know, they fast during Ramadan. A lot of them will go pray on a Friday at the mosque. But I think they're Christians, or they're Muslims, because they don't know anything else. They've never been given another option. And they think they were born into it, so they have to stay in it. To them, it's not a choice. They were born a Moroccan, they were born a Muslim. And so, but a lot of them are really hungry for the truth. It's amazing to me, as we read the Bible to them, how it resonates with them, that they are hungry for the truth. Danny is a key part of what we do while we're there. She helps manage the teams, doing all the shopping and managing the cooking. Obviously, she's busy with the kids as well. She spends a lot of time visiting the women. The women are a huge issue for us because a lot of them can't really get out of the house. You know, we can have a meeting where we'll get 20, 30 men, and it's easy for them. But the women, it's not easy at all. Most of them, you know, we live maybe 15 minutes from the beach, and a 15-minute drive, and most of the women have never even been to the beach. You know, they're always stuck in their little house area. We've been able to baptize close to 40 people, and I would say that the church is beginning to be established. However, there's a lot of issues that come with that, especially in a Muslim context. There's security issues. There's a lot of cultural issues. And again, I'd love to get into that in more detail, but I'd rather do that one-on-one with you guys. So finally, I want to encourage you guys. You know, the easiest, and I honestly think the most important way that you guys can be involved is through prayer. I really believe in the power of prayer. I don't always live that way, unfortunately, but you know, it just blew me away every time I'd send out an update with a prayer request, how quickly that would be answered. You know, and I really believe that if we as a body commit to praying for these people, some of you went to the fundraiser. He was an Islamic imam, which is like their pastor. Studied the Quran for 28 years, and before becoming a believer. And he's a natural leader. I think God is raising him to be a leader in the church. But there's a lot of attacks that he experiences as a result. So pray for Farid. Pray for Habib as well. He's another guy who is kind of developing into a leader. I think these two guys in particular are really crucial to our work, to our goal of there being a self-sustaining church in amongst the Reefy Berbers. Habib is one who has a great testimony as well. Came from a really rough background. And he is really hungry now to see the church grow. But things aren't easy for him. So pray for Fadid, pray for Habib. Pray in general for trust among the believers. There's very little trust in Islam. It's a culture of lies. You know, if you believed in a God who could change his mind, I think you would be a liar as well. And they just live in this culture where what you say doesn't match what you do. And that's just kind of accepted. And so that's a real issue for the church as they become believers and that starts to change. They have a real problem with trust. Pray for boldness in the face of fear. Pray for mom and dad as they go. I'm excited. I think we get a chance to pray for them after the service here. And, you know, this will be the first time for them going without any kids. So be praying for them. We're going to play a slideshow here with some pictures and just to kind of give you guys a better idea of what we do. I think I have time, 5 minutes. I'd just like to end with, if I may, a little paraphrase of Isaiah 49 that I read earlier. It's too small a thing for you to be God's servants and reach the people of Gig Harbor and fill up his churches here. You know, that's important. And we all need to be involved in those things. But I believe God wants to make you a light for the world that you may bring his salvation to the ends of the earth. If we don't do it, who will? So that's just what I'd like to leave you guys with. And I'll see if I can get this going here.